This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We're doing this once again. It is the greatest WWE top 10 tag teams, and once again, this is your host for this podcast project, Greg Diener, and I'm with my partner from the greatest WWE wrestlers podcast series, Robert Silva. Robert, it's a pleasure to welcome you back for this project.
Yeah, I had a ball doing it last. One thing I want to mention is I'm shocked at the little amount of voters this time around. Last year,
I know.
I mean, only 51 ballots this year? Unbelievable. So basically, you're getting 4% of the vote. In our two votes of what we voted. I'm just shocked, and I'm amazed how two of the top five teams that were voted on by both us and the results, because we have the results are out. They were left off two ballots. I don't understand that.
It bothers me too. But I mean, I gotta say I cannot complain about where the top ten, or even though like one of the teams wasn't on our ballot, considering you know it one of the teams is a current tag team. But I can understand why this one team was voted in. But I
can't argue with their top 10. I mean, it was just like last year. And it's funny. A few months ago, I was listening to our greatest WWE wrestler of all time podcast. And when at the end of the show, I was saying how I would be surprised if Randy Savage won. Hey, he won, even though he wasn't our number one.
I can't argue with the result.
I can't. He checked all the boxes, and but that was a shame too because John Cena, Bruno, and Hogan weren't on everybody's ballot. Come on.
It's like the baseball. It's like when we talked about the Baseball Hall of Fame balloting at the end of our last series. I mean, it's like some voters have their biases, and it's just a damn shame.
Yeah, it was Stone Cold. No, Stone Cold, Bruno, Hogan, and Cena weren't on all 100 and something ballots, which didn't make any sense to me. Might have been over 200. Whatever, it was much more. Many more ballots placed last year than this year. I don't understand how any wrestling fan. I mean, it's different than the Hall of Fame ballot. You got writers that have their prejudices because this guy wouldn't give an interview, or you have a writer like no one. I'm keeping this guy off the ballot because I don't believe anybody should be 100%. By the way, congratulations, Mariano Rivera.
Yes.
If anybody ever deserved 100%, he did because he is the Babe Ruth, Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan of relief pitchers. The best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. You will never see another relief pitcher like Mariano Rivera ever in our lifetime. All right.
No.
And so he just... So if anybody deserved 100%, he did.
Well, I have a feeling that he'll be joined in that category next year.
Hey, he doesn't deserve 100%. I know you're talking about the owner of the Florida Marlins, but come on. If he gets 100%, that's bullshit. Oh, come on. Oh, my God. Then again,
I guarantee you there will be some Miami writers that won't vote for him for obvious reasons.
Or maybe Boston writers. I don't know. I mean, the reason Boston writers voted for Mariano this year was, hey, he choked in games 3, 4, and 5 of the greatest collapse in baseball history.
Yeah, I guess they forgot about how he just schooled the Red Sox in Game 7 of the ALCS the previous year.
I know.
They conveniently forget about that. By the way, thank you, Mike Mussina, props also. Unsung hero that game.
Yeah, Congratulations to Mike Mussina also for making the Baseball Hall of Fame.
All right, so let's get into the tag team project. You know, as a kid, when I started watching WWE at WWF at 4 years old, one of the things that hooked me, aside from Hogan, the characters and everything, was tag team wrestling. Because tag team wrestling, I think, makes wrestling very unique. Because it's not like you have tag team boxing.
I'm surprised you don't have tag team mixed martial arts. It could work.
I'm surprised someone hasn't even tried that. I mean,
but you think you have doubles in tennis,
yeah,
right? You could have, you could have tag team MMA. You got the cage, right?
Yeah.
One guy, you got two. One guy on the one side, so your partner's on each side. I mean, and you make it strict. If you try and break up a submission, automatic disqualification. I said, imagine the drama. You're in a Fujiwara arm bar or whatever, a LaBelle arm lock, whatever you call that. And your other arm, and you're reaching out for a tag. Imagine the drama as Joe Rogan is screaming, make that tag! She's trying to make that tag! That would be great. I'm surprised they never even thought about it. I think it would bring a lot to the table and spice up the UFC and Bellator and all the other existing MMA organizations.
So if you're a podcaster and you know somebody in MMA, take that idea. Take that idea of tag team MMA and make it be a thing, please.
Hey, my man Gary Gonzalez, my friend Gary Gonzalez, who's a close personal friend of Dave Meltzer and has helped running the Observer since Dave had his injury and Dave's son got sick. He knows a lot of people in the UFC field, and Dave is as important in MMA as any other journalist. Reach out. I think I'm gonna send them a question about that. On the ask them why can't there be a possibility of tag team? I know the answer probably be, well, then people will think it's not legit if they had tag team. You can do it. If it's done in tennis, you can do it in mixed martial arts, and it could extend these guys' careers longer because it's less punishment they'll take in a fight.
Yeah, let's go first.
Yeah, what you said about tag team growing up, you're right about it. And when did you start following professional wrestling? 88, 89? When did you first start watching?
88, 89, because my brother, it was always on the house because my brother had the Hogan workouts, the LJN Hogan workout tape. Superstars and Wrestling Challenge would always be on Fox 5 here in New York.
Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Saturdays and Sundays at noon. Yep.
Yep. So, I mean, it wasn't like I was flipping through the channels and all of a sudden I come in and I see, oh, the Ultimate War. No, that's not how it happened. It was just, it's just on the television. There's wrestling. There it is.
Well, that's how it happened with me. I started following wrestling in July of 1981, and I'm flipping through the channels. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a boxing historian. So I'm flipping through the channels looking to see if I can find a fight. And I go to the UHF stations, and the Spanish stations would always show boxing on the weekend at a ridiculous time. I tuned into Channel 47. It was a Saturday afternoon, and I see Vince McMahon that runs now, not the father, the son, who's still running things. And he was the announcer back then, and he's doing the interview segments, and he interviewed Greg Valentine and Don Morocco back-to-back, and I was hooked. I was like, oh, shit.
And, of course, Bob Backlund in the main event to defend the World Wrestling Federation Championship against our next guest, Greg Valentine. Now the number one contender, the master of the figure four leg lock. Indeed, this is a beautiful robe, Mr. Valentine, with a smile on your face.
Everything about me is beautiful. I've got the body that men fear and women love. $3,000 robes, a diamond ring, and a Cadillac man. The big city man, that is me. New York City is my town, and Madison Square Garden is my arena. And in that square circle, that is where I'm going to meet head on into the greatest world champion of all time, Bobby Backlund. Howdy doody, they call him. Well, let me tell you something. You are nothing but a puppet to me, and that's exactly what you're going to be when I get in that ring and slap that figure four leg lock on. I'm vicious. I'm mean. They call me the beauty and the beast combined, because when I take this robe off, the beast comes out in me, and there's no way to stop me, Backlund. I don't back up. I just keep on coming. Coming straight for you, straight for those spindly legs of yours, the spinning toe hold, the figure four leg lock. You have seen them all. The people have seen that wrestlers have been injured. They have seen the wrestlers being carried out in stretchers, carried out in ambulances, because I not only beat my opponents, I eliminate them.
But the first tag team I remember back then watching that they were pushing hard, when I first started watching, the tag team of Rick Martel and Tony Guerrero had just retained the WWF tag team titles from the Moondogs. And like when you first started watching, Greg, tag team wrestling was just as big as the singles. And when you started watching 88, 89, you watched it right around the time the Bulldogs were leaving, but you had Demolition, you had the Hart Foundation, you had the Rockers, you had the Brain Busters. You could make an argument that this was the height of tag team wrestling.
Yes.
In the history of the WWF, when you started watching the Rougeau brothers, you had some great. Now you had horrible teams like the Bushwhackers and the Bolsheviks. Oh God, awful! And when they wrestled each other, oh my God, go to the bathroom. But you had some great tag teams, and that was a great era. I love Haku and Andre.
Haku and Andre were, I know it was like Andre near the end of his run, like right at the end of his run, but him and Haku were very underrated together.
Well, they were given the tag team titles because the Brain Busters had left, and they put over Demolition, and then Demolition was supposed to get it right away, so Haku and Andre won it real quickly, and then finally would lose at that following year's WrestleMania. But I loved Andre, and Andre loved Haku. Andre loved Haku, as Bret Hart wrote in his book. I mean, Andre, he was the only guy that could possibly kick Andre's ass, and he loved hanging out with Haku. And I tell you, Haku would have kicked Andre's ass.
Well, considering Haku once bit a guy's nose off, yeah. All right, so let's get to the list. My number 10 was the first three-time WWF tag team champions, and that would be Afa and Sika, the Wild Samoans.
They're not in my top 10, but I can't argue. I love the Wild Samoans, and they ushered in a family. The Inoue brothers, right? That's how you say their name?
Inoue.
Inoue, the Inoue brothers ushered in, they were the first generation of wrestlers that to this day continue to flourish. I mean, you have the Usos and you have Roman Reigns.
Yes.
Continuing that tradition that the Inoue brothers began. And they wrestled not only the W, everywhere they went, Greg, they were top tier, they were top of the card tag teams. Whether it was in Georgia or Mid-South. And anybody that has a WWE Network, check out their Mid-South run. Pretty exciting. From late 81 to early 82 with Ernie Ladd first and then Skandar Akbar as their manager.
I didn't know Georgia's now on the network now.
No, the Mid-South.
Mid-South. Okay.
Check the Mid-South. Georgia, I don't know why Georgia and Florida are not on the network.
Yeah.
But, if you want to see the Wild Samoans in some of them, I mean, book like complete beast and managed by Ernie Ladd and Skandar Akbar, the check out the WWE Network as they have their run from December of 81 till they left in May of 82.
And it says here they feuded with Junkyard Dog and Dick Murdoch in Mid-South.
They would wind up losing the tag team titles to the JYD and Mr. Olympia. And there's a real good match with JYD and Dick Murdoch in one of the Mid-South TV episodes.
Okay. And they came back in after the Mid-South run back to WWF at that point. And
No, they went to Georgia first, then they went to the WWF.
Oh, okay. I'm getting ahead of
They left Mid-South, they went to Georgia, got the national tag team title, and then in the middle of their run, they just gave notice and left with the belts. With the belts, and that's how the World Warriors, the national tag team champions, winning a fictitious tournament. I think it was Albuquerque, New Mexico.
The second most famous fictitious tournament after Pat Patterson
and
Rio.
Oh, no. What about Buddy Rogers? That was a
Oh,
that
Buddy
was
Rogers. So it's the third most famous fictitious tournament ever.
So after they left, but their first run was in 1979/1980. I forgot. Who did they win their first tag team championship against?
I believe.
Was it Sabisco and Gurria?
I'm on the wiki page. It's saying against Tito Santana and Ivan Putski.
Okay, Ivan Putski and Tito Santana. Then they would lose it to Backlund and Morales.
Two out of three.
And then they would. And I think the title was given right back to them because Backlund and Morales weren't allowed to keep the titles because they were the world champion and IC champion at the same time.
They defeated Tony Garea and Rene Goulet in the tournament finals to win that title, but they lasted a month until they lost to Tony Garea and Rick Martel.
And then they wound up beating the Strongbow brothers, Jules and Jay, to win the title for the third time in... I'm trying to remember. Was it
83?
What was it? March or April of 83?
March 8th,
1983. Yeah, I remember watching it. I was like, I mean, just Jay and Jewel. That was right. This was right before the tag team division exploded. After Rick Martel and Tony Garea lost the tag team titles to Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito, Rick Martel left to go to the AWA and back to Montreal, go back and forth. Tony Garea basically became a jobber to the stars. And the tag team division basically was Fuji Saito and the Strongbow brothers. You have an occasional, is right. And then they traded the belts, and then the Strongbow brothers were champions. They were a horrible tag team. Jay Strongbow was 90 years old. Jules Strongbow, his fake brother, had no business being in the ring. He was even worse than Jay, a 90-year-old Jay Strongbow. And finally, they lose the titles to the Samoans. And then the Samoans really didn't have any challenges until late 1983. I mean, the Strongbows would usually face, when they were main eventing Madison Square Garden, there was one great match when he took on Superfly Snuka and Andre the Giant. And Snuka leaped off the top of Andre the Giant's shoulders and pinned one of the Samoans after a headbutt off the top of Andre's shoulders. It was said to be a tag team title match, but for some reason, even though he got the pin, it was changed to a non-title match. I don't understand.
What?
I don't understand that at all. That match, I was like, I remember watching, older fans remember this. Water Wolf used to show on the 11 o'clock sports, the 11 o'clock sportscast, highlights every month at the Garden. He would show highlights from that night's card at Madison Square Garden. And he showed Snuka leaping off Andre, getting the pin 1, 2, 3. I'm like, they got this. The next morning in the Daily News, because the Daily News used to have the next day the results, they had Andre the Giant and Superfly Snuka defeated Afa and Sika in a non-title match. I was like, but what? All month long, leading up to build-up, Vince McMahon is saying this is for the World Tag and for the World Tag Team Championship. Afa and Sika meet the eighth wonder of the world. I'm like, what happened? What happened here?
Why didn't the Slammer just go and get the inside scoop as to why that title match was changed?
I mean, I know why it happened. Andre at that time was still touring. This was before the big expansion, and Andre was still going to Mid-South, Georgia, Florida, Japan. He was being booked by Senior all over the world. So I understand why it wasn't a title change, but hook and bait. You didn't have to hook and bait either. Andre and Superfly was the top dog in the WWF at that time, the number one face. Any card that Superfly, Snuka, and Andre the Giant were tag teaming on was going to sell out. You didn't have to throw a carrot and say, oh, it's for the tag team title. They wouldn't care. They could have been taking on Charlie Fulton and Bob Bradley. They would have still sold out. But I can't argue with your number 10, the Wild Samoans, and they were the first of their family tradition. They were the first as those non-speaking beasts that, I mean, and it was great when Captain Lou was their manager, and all of a sudden, he was dressing and looking just like the Samoans.
The Samoans.
Well, I don't have to say any more, Vince McMahon. It's against Superfly, Jimmy Snuka, one of a kind, a man that you know I have a personal vendetta with, and his partner, Andre the Giant, that big 7'4", 467-pound freak of nature. Yes, a very on his own right, Andre is perhaps unbeatable. But as a combined effort with the brain of a Jimmy Snuka, not being able to think, not being able to have that continuity, C-O-N-G-U-T-Y, the togetherness that is so vital in a tag team combination, I believe that these men, Seeker and Afa, with a combined 586 pounds of power, agility, speed, dynamite, intestinal fortitude, and go-behind, have got it all together, brother.
Lou Albano, along with Afa and Seeker. In a moment.
I know. Well, Captain Lou, I mean, God, how many teams did he manage to the tag titles? I mean,
I think it was 16 or 17. I mean, and he managed them. And later on in the 90s, he managed the Suns, Samu and Fatu, the Hedgerickers, as the tag team champions.
So it all came full circle.
Fatu and the Tiger Kid, they're Afa and Seeker are their nephews, are their uncles, because their sister is their mother, is the mother of Fatu and Tama, the Tiger Kid.
Yeah, you know, everything I've learned about Samoans, I've learned from wrestling. And
There you go.
My understanding is like every Samoan to me is related to each other in some way.
And this is a perfect segue to my number 9.
Yes.
The Islanders. Because my number 10 it'll be one of your top ones. So I'm going to leave alone my number 10.
Yeah, your 10 my number was 10 my was, 2. So.
My 10 was your number 2. So forget my number 10. Straight to number 9. Another great Samoan tag team. We talked about him earlier. I love this tag team. Haku, King Taga, and Tama, the Tonga Kid. The Islanders, I love this tag team. They were the perfect tag. They were like the Samoan version of the Hart Foundation. You had the high-rate worker in Tama, and you had the big man powerhouse in Haku, similar to Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. And it's a damn shame. Although they had some great matches. Yeah, they did have matches before the Islanders turned. That's right. The Islanders came in the summer of 86, but they weren't Tama and Haku yet. They were King Tonga and the Tonga Kid. I was like, wow, two of my favorite wrestlers. The Tonga Kid had a sensational run in the WWF in the fall of 84, feuding with Roddy Piper doing Superfly Snuka's fake neck injury, but real-life rehab. He was in rehab, and so the Tonga Kid, at the age of 18, filled in for Jimmy Snuka, and he was the perfect replacement. He was red hot, Greg. He was red hot. There was a TV match, and I want everybody to go look it up. I believe it was November of 84 on All-Star Wrestling. It was Roddy Piper versus the Tonga Kid, and that match was red hot, heat galore, and it was sensational. Sensational.
He's doing. Piper has a chair. Piper threw the security man off. That Piper has a chair. Here he comes with it. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Tonga Kid on top of Piper. Going outside. Tonga Kid on the top rope. Tonga Kid now. Here he comes. Oh, the headbutt.
Tonga Kid, one of the few guys to ever beat Piper, as he won by disqualification, as Piper tried to take a chair to the Tonga Kid. Tonga Kid wins by DQ. The following week, Piper is trying to attack the Tiger Kid, and before he could do anything, Superfly Snuka comes out of nowhere with the neck brace on, runs off Piper, then takes off the neck brace to show the world that he's healthy again. Tiger Kid was red hot, then out of nowhere, quit the WWF in January of 85 to join Pro Wrestling USA, which was the biggest mistake of his career. And he's admitted to this ever since. He was red fucking hot in a feud with the number one heel in the promotion, Roddy Piper. You know, when Snuka leaves, when, not Snuka leaves, when Snuka's fired in June of 85, they have this, the man made a mistake. He brought in C.V. Aki.
Oh, God.
Well, he could have easily mended fences and brought in the Tiger Kid. Tiger Kid would have been the perfect replacement for Superfly Snuka. A 19-year-old Tiger Kid? Unbelievable. So after leaving the WWF and failing with Pro Wrestling USA, he would wrestle in Montreal until finally coming back to the WWF with King Tiger in the summer of 86. And they were a tremendous tag team from the jump. Now, as babyfaces, they floundered as they were losing all the time to the Hart Foundation, right? And then they were injected a new life in the summer of 87 when Bobby Heenan helped turn them heel. And then they went on and had a tremendous feud with Strikeforce, Tito Santana and Rick Martel. And that was a tremendous feud. Then they had a tremendous feud with the British Bulldogs with the stealing of Matilda. They had some great matches, and they looked like they were going to be the tag team champions of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Until, once again, Tama, a.k.a. the Tonga Kid, a.k.a. Sam Fatu, quit the promotion. Out of nowhere, quit the promotion and never came back to the WWF. That was it. The next time you would see him would be 18 months later, where he looked like he ate two people and gained 100 pounds as part of Samoa SWAT team. I don't know what happened. He went from being this slim, high flyer to this, oh my God, bigger than his uncles ever were. Unbelievable. He was Rikishi before Rikishi. I don't know what happened. Craig, he was only 22, 23 years old at the time, and he was woefully out of shape. And after that, he lingered on the independent scene till for the rest of his career. Yeah. And his twin brother was the one that got the huge push. I mean, they were just as big. Rikishi.
Yeah. You know, they had that big feud with Strikeforce, which came about. The turn came against the Can-Am connection, but before that feud could really get going, Tom Zink quit the promotion.
Yeah, and there's still some mystery as to why that happened. He didn't like the fact that Rick Martel was making more money than him, but Rick Martel should be making more money than Tom Zink. Rick Martel was a bigger name for the AWA World Champion.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is Tom Zink? And he never recovered from that either.
No. Zink
never recovered from that. No. He was never as big as he was with the Can-Am Connection, as they were going to win the tag team titles, which went to Strikeforce, and they were going to have a huge run.
And then you have the famous Darg Napping feud with Matilda. One of my favorite angles of all time. One of the great Bobby Heenan is just a dick moves of all time. Stealing their dog. And it just...
That was... And you know what? They had the WrestleMania match.
Oh, that was
the
great.
The six man. Great match with Bobby Heenan getting the pin.
Bobby Heenan. The best part is if you ever got the Coliseum video of WrestleMania 4, which was that double tape.
The double videotape.
And if you open inside, you get that big Hogan pop-up. I remember reading that all the time at the video store. But there was an angle in the Coliseum video where about the dog suit that Bobby Heenan has. Like Craig DeGeorge goes to Bobby Heenan's room anyway, he's getting a package. And Craig DeGeorge is like, "What's in the package?" And he's like, "Well, that's none of your business." Then he comes out and he's wearing a freaking dog biting, an anti-dog biting suit.
That was great.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen, the following...
What kind of an outfit is that, Jez? Look at the brain!
I gotta get it closer on the camera here. What is that?
Looks like a kind of a... I don't know, maybe an attack dog handler's outfit, Jess.
757 pounds from the South Pacific.
I need a better look at it.
And Toma, the Islander.
That's what it is, Jess. That's the kind of outfit those attack dog trainers use.
I love it. That's rendered Matilda helpless then on the brain.
Leave it at
I'll tell you, that's why he's the brain. He never ceases to amaze me. The guy is always thinking.
Those pants are really padded, heavily padded. You can't bite through that material.
You know, Gorilla, between DiBiase's master plan and Bobby the Brain's wrestling outfit, you're seeing why these are the two smartest men in the world of wrestling.
Well, do you think Jesse's going to take that outfit off and that wrestling gear underneath it?
I certainly would, not with that vicious Matilda.
And what was great is, after he got the pin, the next card in Madison Square Garden, he wrestled Coco Beware and beat Coco Beware.
What a great dick move. What a great heel heat. Have him beat Coco Beware twice. That's just terrific.
And then he brags to everybody, oh, open challenge to anybody. And that's when Ultimate Warrior challenged him, and in the following month, Ultimate Warrior beats him and puts him in a weasel suit. You ever see that match? Bobby Heenan wakes up, and he sees in the weasel suit. That shit was priceless. Bobby Heenan, greatest manager of all time. Unfucking believable. Yeah. If they would do greatest manager, that'd be a great project for Place to Be Nation to do one year as the greatest managers of all time. And it would be between Heenan and Cornette. It'd be a two-man race.
Yeah.
And that day, Who might be third? Paul Heyman? But a distant third.
I believe that Warrior-Heenan match was at County Stadium in that WrestleFest show.
Yeah, but they first wrestled at the Garden. That was before they did the County Stadium show, yeah. That show where it was like 40,000-something people, but they barely made any noise until Hogan came out and beat Andre.
Yeah, that Hogan-Andre cage match. Something else. I mean, as a kid, I saw that in the video store, and I was like, oh, my God, Hogan Andre in a cage match? I never rented the tape, but I was always like, oh, man, that sounds awesome.
It was 10 times better than their WrestleMania match. Actually, that was the best singles match they ever had because the match at the main event, I mean, that was basically just setting up the prelude to the Twin Hebner angle. And that was the best part of that.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is CBS.
All right, so your number 9 is my number 8. So we can go right into the Rockers.
Yes, the Rockers. But I'd say if I was personal, probably one of my two favorite tag teams of all time, the other one being the Hart Foundation. But objectively, I had to put them at number 9 on this list with all the other teams in the pool. But I will say,
by the way, while we're at it, the results did come out, and let's talk about who 10, 9, and 8 were for the for place to be nation so far.
Okay.
All right, because you guys know our 10, 9, and 8. Right. Number 10 was the New Age Outlaws, right? Number 10 was the New Age Outlaws.
Dudley's.
10 is the Dudley Boys. The Dudley Boys. Number 9 were the New Age Outlaws. And number 8 were the Rockers. And which looks like a lot of the, they were left off only one ballot. So it looked like the 50 guys that voted, including us, all were agreed that the Rockers were a lower bottom top 10 team. I mean, this was the one team that motherfuckers hit the nail on the head. They hit the nail on the head. The Rockers, probably talent-wise, Gray, are number 1, period. Jannetty and Shawn Michaels could do it all.
Oh, yes.
They were flashy. But I don't understand why they never got a run with the tag team titles. They were in the WWF full-time from late 88 till they finally broke up in early 92, right?
Yes.
So that's over 3 years that they were a push tag team, but they were never champions. They never got a run at the title. I don't know if McMahon didn't trust because he knew that they were out all night carousing and getting high. Maybe he couldn't trust them, but, I mean, they delivered. Most of the time on the pay-per-views, it would be, and you'll go into this, they would have the best match on the card. They had great classic matches on almost every pay-per-view card.
They were pretty much the top of each show. I mean, they would give 100%, give it their all, and have the best match of the card every time they were out in the ring.
Whether it would be Madison Square Garden, the monthly Madison Square Garden show, Saturday Night's Main Event, the 3 or 4 pay-per-views out the year, it would be the Rockers to shine. Look at some of the great matches that they had. A great match against the Brain Busters. 2 great matches in 1989 at the Garden against the Brain Busters. Sensational matches. I mean, tremendous. If you want to see how to work a tag team match, watch those matches. How to work as a heel, how to work as a face. Shawn Michaels as the face in peril, phenomenal. Anderson and Blanchard as the cowardly heels, phenomenal. Jannetty making the Superman comeback, phenomenal. And at this point in time, people don't realize this because Shawn Michaels went on to have a legendary singles career. Jannetty was just as good as Michaels in the ring at this time.
Oh, yes. People forget about how good Marty is. I mean, obviously, Marty now is, I mean, it's like a running joke with Marty Jannetty. And obviously, you know, with recent events, you know, he hasn't.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, as a worker on his own, he was just as equally as good as Shawn.
Look at the matches they had. I went to both their Monday Night Raw matches in 1993. Those were the best matches of the year in the WWF that year. Those sensational fucking matches over for the Intercontinental title. And you love the Marty Jannetty 1-2-3 Kid tag team.
Yes.
They were a great tag team for the short time they had. Jannetty had all the ability in the world. He just couldn't get past his demons. Shawn Michaels had similar demons, but Shawn Michaels had the owner of the company had a man crush on him, so he could oversee his personal demons, not to say with Marty Jannetty.
Actually, I forgot to mention this when you talked about the Rockers, everyone, the tag team. They were going to be the champions in 1990.
Yeah, McMahon decided.
The tag.
No. That's the storyline. But McMahon decided to put the titles on the Rockers and change his mind after the taping.
Oh, okay.
Because he was going to split the Hart teams up and make Brett single star, and then he changed his mind, so they made conveniently the ropes broke in that match, so he was able to overturn that decision as storyline based on Jack Tunney saying, "Oh, due to the fact that the ropes broke," that bullshit. But
Forevermore.
That's why. That was supposed to be the Rockers' turn, but McMahon changed his mind.
If you are curious about that match, it is actually on as a bonus feature on the Shawn Michaels Heartbreak and Triumph DVD. Of course, since it never aired, it has no commentary on it. So
it's also the Bret Hart Shawn Michaels Greatest Rivals DVD.
Okay, I keep meaning to pick up the Blu-ray of that, but I never do. I'm pretty sure
The interview was sensational. The interview is a face-to-face. It's sensational.
The interview with JR, with Bret and Shawn, is
sensational. Sensational. I mean, Shawn Michaels is one of the most hated wrestlers, one of the wrestlers I hate the most in the history of my almost 40 years of watching wrestling. 38 years this year I've been following wrestling in some form. He's the one guy I hated the most. Bret's my all-time favorite wrestler. But I got to give the devil his due. Shawn was tremendous. He was very honest. He admitted to being wrong. I mean, just a tremendous face-to-face. And JR, there's no better moderator in sports. I mean, JR, they should have him moderate the next presidential debate. He's a phenomenal moderator. Mr. Trump, Slavinaka here. It was tremendous. It was tremendous. Just to see that. The matches, most of you see the matches. They're great. You have the great Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels Survivor Series match in 92. You got the Montreal Screwjob 5 years later, 97. You got all that. You got the one-hour marathon plus overtime WrestleMania match. But the best part of that DVD is the face-off with Jim Ross as the moderator. And that was supposed to be the first of a series of greatest rivalries, but I don't think they only did a few.
I think that was the only one in that series, if I'm not mistaken.
It was supposed to be I'm surprised. I mean, you had Hogan Andre. There's a whole lot of others you could have done. Austin Rock. Come on.
Austin McMahon.
Yeah, Austin McMahon. They missed out on that one. But yeah, so yeah, your number nine was my number eight. So we go back to you for your number eight.
Oh, okay. So my number eight, I'm going to go with obviously the top tag team in the modern day. I had to put at least one current team in the top 10. And I think, you know, when people look back at this current era of WWE, it's either going to be the Shield or this team, which is, of course, the now longest reigning WWE tag team champions of all time. And that would be the New Day of Big E,
you could also. I think you could have made an argument for the Usos also. Those are the three teams they'll talk about: the Shield, the Usos, and the New Day. You'll have to talk about this because I have not watched the product, the current product in years. You followed it much more closely than I have. So you explain to the listeners why the New Day has been this great tag team.
Okay, I'll take over the reins from here. Okay. Well, Kofi Kingston, of course, he began his career with in 2008 in ECW. I remember him being called up, and of course, that famous thing with Mike Adamley back when he had that Jamaican gimmick of saying Jamaican me crazy. And Big E, I remember he actually came up originally as the second for Dolph Ziggler. When he was paired up with AJ Lee in their in Dolph and AJ's feud with John Cena, he made his debut on an episode of Raw back in 2013, attacking Cena, and then later on that year in November, he ended up winning the Intercontinental Championship. And Xavier Woods, I remember him coming up in TNA when he was Consequences Creed. And I didn't really watch a lot of TNA in like the late 2000s or so, but I actually, whenever I would flip over to Spike TV and watch an episode of TNA here or there, when I saw Woods' Consequences Creed, I thought, wow, this guy's actually not a bad worker. I actually thought he had a good gimmick and a good look, and well, obviously he must have impressed WWE because they ended up being signed by them. And I want to say 2011 or so, but around 2014, Big E and Kofi were like paired together as a tag team. And it was kind of like how you said, Robert, about how the Islanders were just a babyface tag team, but they ended up jobbing a lot of times.
Yes, yes. Well,
Xavier would come out after a match where they lost saying that they could not get ahead by kissing babies and shaking hands, and that it would be their time to shine. So they got...
I remember accidentally tuning into Raw one night. It was by accident. And I saw Xavier Woods approaching. I don't know if it was Kofi. It was Kofi. And he's like, "You got to wake up, boy, blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Wait a minute. Are they redoing the Nation of Domination angle here?" Because, you know, it's a black manager talking to two black wrestlers. But it became, from what I understand, a comedy version of the Nation of Domination.
Well, here's what happens, okay? So they were disappeared from television, although they continued to make appearances at health shows. And then around late 2004, they began as a black gospel gimmick around 2014. And the fans, they just crapped all over this gimmick. They just thought, "Oh my God, this is like the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life." And so, eventually, they got like such bad reactions because I remember like in the post WrestleMania Raw in 2015, they were in an 8-man tag. I think it was Kalisto and Sin Cara against Kid and Cesaro and the Ascension, and the crowd just crapped right over them, and then. Eventually, WWE, and you got to give them credit for this, they were smart enough to see the reaction. They ended up turning them heel, and then they eventually went on to win the tag team titles the following month at Extreme Rules.
When they began the gospel gimmick, Xavier Woods was part of it. Was already with them.
He was already with them. So they were.
All right. So it was a three. They were three man. Okay.
Yeah, with Freebird rules and whatever. Right. Although it was mostly Big E and Kofi as a team together. So they ended up winning the titles at Extreme. They ended up losing the titles to Elimination Chamber against the Primetime Players. Yeah, that was right. And then they ended up winning them back at SummerSlam 2015 against them in a four-way tag match with the Lucha Dragons and Los Matadores, who were Primo and Epico as Matadores, and oh, don't get me started on Los Matadores. What a terrible gimmick that was. But they ended up, at around that time, they had a feud with the Dudley Boys. The Dudley Boys actually came back the night after SummerSlam, if I remember correctly, and that they ended up starting a feud with them, which actually was a very good feud. It was kind of like the old generation of tag teams from your early 2000s putting over the new generation in the new day.
Right, right.
So it was kind of like sort of like a passing of the torch, which I kind of enjoyed.
Very detective.
Whoa,
what are you doing?
You don't just creep up on people like that.
Oh, come on.
You trying to get hurt? Man. We got Dudleys running around putting people through tables unnecessarily, like poor sports after they lose a match, and you want to come creeping? That's a good way to get hurt, man. That's a good way to get hurt.
Definitely wasn't my intention. I just wanted to get some thoughts
knock
after.
Knock or something. Before you come around, when you come to someone's house, you knock. You see us over here chilling in the cut like this is our home over here.
Knock.
You see him? Knock.
Go ahead.
Knock. Knock. Kyle.
Try to get
knock on
Carl,
the door.
Knock.
It's a terrible knock.
We don't
now
want
I
any. We don't want any.
We don't want any. No soliciting.
Can't you?
I need to
ask the question, man.
Can't you see how injured I am?
You see him?
I put through a table.
What was your question? If your question doesn't concern Woods' safety, then we don't want to hear it. You better ask a question that concerns Woods, this fighting champion, this perfect human being.
I'm a champion.
I need
look
to get
at him.
Ask the question.
Ask the question.
Look. I have my best here.
It's not good enough.
Whoa. That's your best? I'm trying my. That was your
that
best?
Was it?
That was
right
your
there.
Best?
That was it. Right there. That was your best.
That was.
That was.
That's a hundred.
That was your
right
best?
There.
Trying my best.
You need to try a little bit harder. There's so many people who would love to be interviewing the New Day right now. You heard all of New York City wanting to talk to the New Day. You saw the people trying to touch on us with their dirty New York filthy hands.
Filthy hands.
They would love to be in your position asking a question. And here you are.
I'm trying my hardest to ask a question. I'm trying my hardest to get the message. I try. Can't.
That's a terrible effort, man.
You got paid for that?
Shame on
they sent you.
You
a check.
Shame.
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 In fact, you need to put this
shame
box on your head. Put it on your head.
Do it.
Put it on your head.
Put it on my head.
Put the box on
do
your
it
head.
Oh.
Now go
shame
away.
And get out.
Go away.
Shame.
Kyle. Go away, Kyle.
Get out.
Leave, Kyle.
Carl, leave.
Leave. You got two first names and no last names. Go find yourself a last name
you
before you come back here, Kyle.
Don't ever trust a man with two first names.
Kyle.
Now let me ask Xavier Woods a question. Woods,
what?
How are you feeling after this nonsensical, brutal attack from these dirty, disgusting, vile Dudleys? How do you feel?
I feel terrible and so cold.
Get him a blanket, what? Kyle! Carl! Whatever your name is!
Carl! Get him a...
Dudley boys, put me through a table! Again! I can't.
Listen, he's cold. Get him a blanket.
Listen, you've seen enough. Just go. Just go. Go.
Go.
Don't backpedal. Turn around and leave.
Go.
What?
This is when they started to get over. They had the League of Booty. They had their New Day cereal. And then along the way, you know, the fans just eventually just turn them face. I mean, it
right,
was just,
right.
It was just, it's like how Becky, you know, the whole thing today with Becky Lynch, how they wanted to make her a heel attacking Charlotte, and the fans were just like, no, we like this.
Right,
let's,
right, right.
Let's just babyface. But they ended up having the longest reigning WWE tag team title reign of all time, went 483 days, broke the 28-year-old record of Demolition, and they ended up losing the titles to Cesaro and Sheamus at Roadblock in 2016. They eventually went on to win the SmackDown Tag Team Championship in 2017. You know, now I guess if you're going by today, we currently have the Kofi Kingston involved with a feud with Daniel Bryan, potentially for the WWE title at WrestleMania might be a possibility. Yeah, we obviously recorded this before WrestleMania back in early March, but we just gotta say congratulations, Kofi, on the championship win at WrestleMania over Daniel Bryan. And now let's get back to me and Robert 1 month ago.
Yeah, I always what I never understood, and the New Day was the best thing ever happened to Kofi Kingston, because from the little I saw him, very talented, tremendous, tremendous worker. But how the hell do you have a guy who was born in Ghana? He's African with a Jamaican gimmick. That made no goddamn sense.
I don't know, man. I don't know. At least it did give us the Mike Adam Lee Jamaican me crazy line.
Jamaican me crazy, Kofi.
I mean, that never made. Here is this guy from Ghana, and they got a bill in Jamaican. Come on. With the Jamaican tights on it, and with the Jamaican flag tights, nah, that'd make it. But I'm happy for Kofi. I'm happy for Xavier Woods and Big E, because they've carved themselves a legacy, and I can't argue with them at number 8. We go straight to my number 7.
which is one of my all-time favorite heel teams. Two of the great big man workers of all time. The East-West connect, no, the North-South connection.
Yes.
Of Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch. What a great tag team.
This is like one of these teams that it's like, it's right when the expansion of the WWF is starting, but it ends
yes.
like right before right before WrestleMania 1. So it's like.
Exactly. Right.
It's like there's this great team there, but it's like you just don't know about it. It's like when you discover like a movie that's critically acclaimed that nobody saw in the theater.
Adonis and Murdoch came to the WWF in January of 1984. I forgot the name of their manager, but he disappeared real quickly, and then they didn't have a manager. They didn't need a manager. Both guys are great heel interviews. I mean, they give great promos, and they're great workers. And they weren't supposed to win the tag team titles right away. Only reason they were given the tag team titles in April of 84 was because Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson had personal issues with each other. They hated each other with a passion. And McMahon was pushing them hard, but had to separate the two. They dropped the titles to Adonis and Murdoch, and then Atlas left the WWF to go to the AWA. And anybody with any working knowledge of the AWA knows that Vern Gagne doesn't push black people. He doesn't push black wrestlers.
Oh,
so I don't know why. I don't know why Tony Atlas went to the AWA.
We've listened to enough Between the Sheets. We know.
Yes. Yeah, I'm like, come on, Vern. I mean, Tony Atlas went to go wrestle for Vern, and then when he did come back to the WWF about 6 months later, whatever momentum he had gained with his tag team with Rocky Johnson died. Tony Atlas would spend the next 3 years being a jobber to the stars. Adonis and Murdoch were tremendous. Tremendous tag team. They were great as these two bullies who were great, what you call it, cowardly heels. Cowardly heels.
Okay.
They were great cowardly, and they took phenomenal bumps. Adrian Adonis took Kurt Hennig like bumps. When Dick Murdoch was on, he was as great as any worker in the history of professional wrestling. They had great matches with Windham and Rotundo, and with the Samoans. In the summer of 84, the Samoans turned face because Captain Lou turned on them because he wanted to manage Adonis and Murdoch. And so during the summer of 84, the Samoans, for probably the first time in their career, off Fonseca with baby faces, feuding with Adonis and Murdoch.
And a kickoff by Seeker. That may have been just the break he needed.
He's going to make it.
Finally. Crowd come to life. Alpha, a reverse knife edge, a couple of chops.
Oh, he came in and got rammed right into his partner.
Collision, headbutt, and again.
Alpha taking over,
taking matters into his own hands.
Oh, right through it into the steel post.
Boy, what a jarring blow that had to be.
Coming up.
Listen to this crowd on their feet. Both Adonis and Murdoch rocked as a result of that collision. And Big Alpha chops away at the 271-pound Texan. Murdoch into the turnbuckles up.
Oh, what a backdrop!
What was the hang time on that
Holy
one?
Holy mackerel, some 8 or 10 feet high, maybe 12. Drops that head right on him. Headbutt to the back of the neck, his favorite maneuver. Murdoch in serious trouble.
I concur on that. That other headbutt on our part of Alpha. Oh,
here
what
comes
a matchup.
Adonis back in.
Double teaming at every opportunity.
Double slingshot in. Oh, double elbow right to the throat. Oh, they dropped it out. What's the referee doing?
There's the splash of the pin. Two.
He's going to get him.
Three.
And these were the best matches of the Samoans' careers. Adonis and Murdoch, I mean, they sold for these guys like gangbusters. Adonis and Murdoch had some of the greatest tag team matches in the history of the WWF with Jack and Jerry Briscoe in the winter of 1984. There was one TV match, and I love this. There was a Piper's Pit. Jack and Jerry Briscoe was on Piper's Pit. This was late November, early December 1984, and Piper's going on, "Oh, Jack Briscoe, you're a former world heavyweight champion. You guys are former two-time world champions. Jerry Briscoe, your former world junior heavyweight champion." Only Piper could get away with this because in the world of WWF, nothing existed before you came to the WWF. But here's Piper talking about the Briscoe's past. And he's like, "You have all that, but what makes you think you're good enough to wrestle the WWF?" And Jack Briscoe always gave a great face interview as I'll take on anybody. And they challenged Adonis and Murdoch. And the following week, they had a tremendous match on television with Adonis Murdoch. And then, the night that Dr. D, David Schultz, slapped the shit out of John Stossel, the best match on that card was the Briscoe brothers versus Adonis and Murdoch, December 28th, 1984. The feud would end a couple of weeks later when Jack Briscoe, outside the Meadowlands, in 10 inches of snow, said, "Man, fuck this. Jerry, you're on your own. I'm going to the airport. I'm going back to Tampa. I'm done." And he retired on the spot. And then Adonis and Murdoch would lose the tag team titles to Windham and Rotundo shortly thereafter. And they were gone before WrestleMania. They went to Japan to team up. And then Murdoch would never come back to the WWF. Adonis would come back 6-8 months later as he slowly transformed into his Boy George gimmick.
Murdoch, he did come back for one appearance at the 95 Rumble, if I recall.
Yeah, for the Royal, and yeah, for what, a year before he died.
Yes, because I do remember he was, he also wrestled at Slamboree for WCW that year in 95.
Yeah, and he died in 96.
But it wasn't there for long, but it was very good while it lasted.
Yeah, they're a tremendous tag team. They're very similar to the Brave Busters, and they had such a great short run. Had they been there, neither team was there for maybe a year, but if they'd been there 3-4 years, you're talking possibly the number one and number two tag teams of all time in the WWE / WWF.
That will put us to my number 7, which would be Bubba Ray and D-Von, the Dudley Boys.
I mean, their matches with Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys are among the greatest matches in the history of the WWF, period. Those ladder matches, every type of match they had. The Dudley Boys, while not on the level of the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian as workers, had the perfect complement to those great tag team styles.
I cannot say enough about the TLC matches. You could probably consider the triangle ladder match at WrestleMania 2000 a triple TLC, even though it's not really technically a TLC. But I mean, because the first TLC match is technically SummerSlam 2000. But
right.
That trilogy of matches set the bar so high for tag team
wrestling. And let me tell you something. One inch left to the right, and one of those six guys could have gotten paralyzed. That shit, what was it?
I think it was Edge in WrestleMania 17 doing the spear off the ladder, if I recall correctly.
Oh, one misstep and you might have two dead wrestlers there. I don't know how that move was perfected. No flaws whatsoever. Perfectly executed. Oh, my God. Talk about the excellence of execution. You watch that and you're like, how the hell did they pull that off without somebody getting hurt?
You have to protect it exactly right to have the perfect matches. And those three series of matches.
Those are the greatest series of tag team matches. That's right up there when it comes to series of matches in the history of the WWF. That's up there with the Triple H, Mankind, Cactus Jack series. That was tremendous. Those matches were tremendous. I mean, pissed off that Triple H went over every time. You could have given Cactus Jack Mick Foley one win, right? Be that as may. Tremendous matches. The Austin Rock WrestleMania matches, all great matches.
I mean, that's up there with those matches in terms of shit. And I don't know of any tag team or feud that was as good as that three-way feud. I mean, just phenomenal.
And the Dudleys, I mean, their act was probably maybe one of the best acts, I think, in that period, because they had come off from ECW, and they were red hot when they left ECW, because they would Bubba's promos in ECW where he just would insult the fans. Oh my!
Well, you know what? When they got rid of his stuttering, yeah, which was ridiculous, and he just became a badass heel. That's when they began to flourish even more. And then when they came to the WWF, and to this day you hear it. They perfected the slogan. Get the table! You know, I mean, you know what was coming. And they were a perfect heel tag team and deserving of their high ranking. I think they're number seven. Hold on, let's go. You just did. Dudley's on your seven, right?
Usos are
right. Let me look at the.
Dudley's were 10 on the poll.
Okay, and then who? Seven were the Usos. Wow, the Usos were seven. So and we mentioned the Rockers at eight.
Okay, that's gonna do it for me and Roberts. Part one of our list of the greatest WWE tag teams project, and we will have part two for you next time right here on Place to Be Nation. So until then, have a great rest of your day wherever you're listening to this, and so long, everybody.
You know, I was just looking at a picture here in the WrestleMania book. Check it out, Jess. Look who's next to Vanna. I even signed it for her right here. She's right around the corner. We've been talking and going over a few things about WrestleMania, what we're going to do later on. You know how it is. I'm sorry about it, big boy. Hey, you know, with all the excitement and everything that's going on here with WrestleMania, I can't forget my little darling. I've been writing her letters, man. They just haven't caught up to her. You know how they move.
You've been writing Vanna White letters?
Yeah, that's right, buddy boy. And speaking of letters, you're going to get a letter a little later on. All three of you guys, the Islanders, and the Weasel, I might add, the British Bulldog, Coco Beware. And I got a big surprise for you, baby. And I know you know he's here. Matilda's back, and you are in a jam. For what you did to that dog, the ASPC KGBY ought to be on you forever.
First of all, I don't have to take insults from you or anybody else. You talk about people writing in letters. You had over 700,000 votes to get in the Hall of Fame. You'd have had a lot more than that, but you ran out of stamps. So don't tell me any of your garbage.
Yeah.
And as far as some dog putting the bite on me, dragging me out in the sand, and burying me so nobody can find me, you're wrong. See, I got a surprise for everybody. I got my Islanders. Bobby the Brain Heenan. You can take Coco Beware. You can take the British Bulldogs and that miserable mutt Matilda and that bird. Put them all in one package and get rid of them. I got other things to do. Gentlemen, let's get ready.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of smorgasbords, Matilda's going to have plenty tonight. And you Islanders, don't ask me to come back and speak at your outrigger dinner. You guys have had it as far as I'm concerned.